Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN in association with Betfred. Good to have you with us, gang. Will Gavin in the house for our Week 13 preview. Will, of course, part of the TalkSport crew on the Gridiron, gang, as well. Always a fine guest. Looking forward to getting in to some of the big games, in particular on the Week 13 slate. Rams, Cards, we'll talk Saints, Falcons, Browns, Titans. That is intriguing too. We'll do our level best to get into each and every game on the Week 13 slate for you. Big shout out to all of you who have left reviews on whichever pod platform you listen to. We really appreciate that. Help spread the word. It is massively appreciated by ESPN, by our partners, Betfred. So thank you for taking the time to do that. If you haven't already, you got to spare 30 seconds. That would be fine and dandy. And also saluting all the crew over on social media at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Lots of extra content that gets put out there, videos as well. So make sure if you haven't already, go give us a follow there. Right, let's get straight down to business. Lot to cover. So we will check in right away with Will Gav. Will Gav, it's always a pleasure to see you, man, particularly when you're resplendent in a San Francisco 49ers Christmas jumper.
Look, it's December. The spirit of Christmas cheer is upon us. And the 49ers are back in the playoff race. So I figured I'd treat you to a little visual splendor as well as audio splendor today.
Who'd have thunk it? Huh? Your 49ers back in business. I quite fancy them this weekend as well against the Bills. We'll talk about that later. We're going to do our very best to pick every game. And that is a tall order, particularly for you, Will, because, of course, you and I work together each and every week on the radio coverage every Sunday. It was a smart idea from producer Earl to pit us head to head, of course, against our guests who we snappily titled team guest. But that ship has sailed, right? I think you formally conceded last week.
It took all of 3 minutes for you to mention this. Brilliant. I have had a bad season. And the worst part is that I previously, Gridiron did a whole picks league previously, and I topped that. And we did it with, there were thousands of listeners got involved as well. And it was all done through the Gridiron website. And they still do it every season, but I've not been involved this year. And me and Matt Sherry finished 1-2 and I pipped him by like 2 picks. And ever since then, I've been real kind of cock of the walk about how good I am at the picks. So this has been absolutely devastating this season to be just as bad as it has been. And I, you know, in the way that nobody should. I've been chasing the wins for weeks upon weeks.
That's
it all gets
very messy. I love this. I love the pride comes before us full story. Also, as you talk about that picking competition, and it just got me thinking of our friend, Mike Carlson, of course, who regularly reminds us that he picks better than any expert in the world, including supercomputer as well. So I'm just spotting some kind of future show which gets you, the Gridiron crew, supercomputer, all of us in the mix for one big showdown. But anyway, hey, all is not lost, just like it isn't for your 49ers. It could still come back. We're going to get into that game. All the others, there are three in particular that we want to key in on: Rams, Cards, Saints, Falcons, Browns, Titans, and then we'll do rapid fire on the others. Before we do, though, quick question for you. Matt Nagy, everybody's favorite, extraordinary press conference he gave where he was calling out anybody, essentially. And it got me thinking, Will, who gives the more awkward yet watchable presser? Is it Matt Nagy or is it Adam Gase?
I think Adam Gase is more entertaining. Adam Gase is just straight up a little bit. I remember we did Bears Packers to start last season, you know, back when we could travel internationally and actually go to games. We went to Soldier Field and we did it from in stadium on the Thursday night. It's a dreadful game of football. And Matt Nagy had a dreadful game of play calling. But I remember doing his press conference on probably the Friday beforehand and thinking, this guy is a little bit either full of himself or just a bit odd, or just like, I couldn't quite pinpoint it. Whereas Adam Gase is just plain weird. Like, and last week got caught out in just an actual lie, just on the play calling. One of the beat writers asked him straight out and said, look, we're not seeing your offensive coordinator making those play calls, and yet you seem to have your head in the play sheet. And he started making up this thing about, well, yeah, he tells me the first three plays of a series, I call them so that he can pay closer attention, then he calls them. And the guy was just like, no, he doesn't. You keep calling them. Well, what happens is in this point, and the whole thing was so bizarre.
We will be there, right? Where I'm sure we have. Definitely at school. one or two times. I mean, I know you are probably the star people will gab and
a bastion of honesty.
Rarely get into any kind of trouble, but it was brilliant. You described it perfectly. The line just got more and more awkward, and he was just getting into deeper and deeper water. And we all knew, but he tried to style it out. It was extraordinary. I've got a theory that Adam Gaze, I was talking to producer Ollie about this on the Edge Rush show, that Adam Gaze, A, might be a genius. B, could be Rex Ryan about to rip his mask off come week 17. Folger. There's just something more to this story than meets the eye. I'd like to think there is. Well, I like to think there is. But Matt Nagy, that was extraordinary. And the Bears in free fall as well. Let's get down to stuff, though, because we do have a hell of a lot of ground to cover. And Marley, producing today, he'll kick off. Well, you've got to be careful. He will kick off. Fearsome, Singletary style. So we got.
He really strikes me as that. When I first got on the Zoom today, immediately terrifying. Just a Tomlin style stare down the camera at me.
Very Tomlin-esque. Very Tomlin-esque. Let's start Rams cards. Because of course two teams that play in your 49ers division. The two teams you know particularly well. Two teams, particularly the Rams case, that seem quite difficult to work out. They both need a bounce back win. The cards trending very much in the wrong direction. The Hawks and New England have held them to 17 and 21 points respectively. Kyler Murray's been bottled up. They just don't seem to have that mojo at the stage of the season when it counts. This is a difficult proposition for them, isn't it? Coming up against this front seven, having D-Hop against Jalen Ramsey. I mean, this looks to me like an important and necessary bounce back win for the Rams. Tell me I'm wrong, Will Gavin.
It was interesting hearing from Kelvin Beachum this week, the Cardinals right tackle, who has been in Pittsburgh in very successful teams, in playoff teams, in championship level teams, discussing just how inexperienced this team was and how he was trying to communicate to them, look, this is playoff football right now. We mentioned it at the top, but the 49ers being back in the playoff race. I mean, if the Rams still face the Cardinals twice, if the Rams sweep the Cardinals could drop out of the playoffs in favor of the 49ers, which would be absolute worst case scenario for them. Not just dropping out when they've looked so strong, when they had a guy who 2 weeks ago people wanted to put in the MVP race in Kyler Murray. It looked like they were going to be a real force this season. And then I really do think on their side, it's down to coaching. I know it's something we bang on about on the Sundays every week, but Cliff Kingsbury the last 2 weeks has been outcoached by two absolute greats. The Patriots have arguably the least talented front seven in football, and yet they completely restricted a run game which had dominated teams week in, week out for 8-9 weeks of the season. They restricted Kyler Murray to, 15 yards? They restricted the team overall to their short lowest rushing total in the last 7 weeks. And
they put nothing up. The Patriots won that game, and Newton had less than 100 yards as usual, it seems, unfortunately, these days for Cam. They couldn't get the ground game going either. I mean, it was just a mess offensively for New England, and yet they got the job done. I mean, that is interesting, your stat on Murray there. And over those two games I mentioned, he's had 10 carries, 46 yards, just two first downs in that as well. His shoulder's an issue, and we're hearing about that. And I wonder how much that is impacting the play calling that they're drawing up. Outside of that, though, is this the big concern with this game? That, and a lot of big ifs, right? Because Jalen Ramsey shut down DK Metcalf and other serious threats throughout the course of the season. He's, I would say, I'm keen on, you think about this, maybe the best quarterback in football right now. Assuming he does do a reasonable job on DeAndre Hopkins, does that make this an almost impossible chance for the Cards, given how indifferent they're being at the moment and different how and seeing how much pressure that's going to put on Murray's arm in particular, which is still over the course of the season on a consistency level far from the finished article.
Ramsey, I'm glad you mentioned the performance against DJ Metcalf, because I thought that was astonishing, even for a player we know is an incredibly high level cornerback. It was as shut down as kind of anything I can think of from the last few years. It was Patrick Peterson at his best. It was Darrell Revis at his best. It was that kind of level of performance. And if he can do that against DeAndre Hopkins, there was this idea that going into this season that Cliff Kingsbury's four wide receiver system that he brought out of college. They run four wide receivers more than any other team in the NFL. That now they had DeAndre Hopkins to go with Larry Fitzgerald, Andy Isabella, Christian Kirk, the four of them together, that suddenly that was going to just absolutely click. The weeks where it's worked really well has been normally DeAndre Hopkins having 10 plus catches, 100 plus yards. Like that is, he has made the whole thing run. And so if he is someone that you can shut down and combine it with a front seven who, they let up a couple of big runs against the 49ers, but the second half performance against San Francisco, the Rams defense really stood up and were counted for and made a big, big difference. The 49ers let the Rams back into that game and they probably could have beat them by two or three scores if they'd continued the momentum from the first half. And I think that that was hugely down to the defense. And on the other side of the ball, I think the Rams have a good offense, and I think Jared Goff is a viable NFL quarterback.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you where you stand. And you and I, of course, have been long-standing listeners of TMR. And way back in the day, I remember chatting to you about being an early adopter of fantasy football. And, of course, I'm mentioning that show now because I am, if nothing else, a company man. And back in the day, we had the Dalton line, of course. And the Dalton line was that median level quarterback. And so let me throw that at you with a little twist, because as far back as I can remember, back in that early 2000s Ravens side, right, with Dilfer, you look at whether a quarterback of average capability can A, get you to a Super Bowl, Rex Grossman style, and B, ultimately win a Super Bowl, whether you're looking at an end of the era Peyton through to earlier or Roethlisberger in his rookie season. A quarterback doesn't really influence the game particularly, but through the course of the season does enough to get you there because all the other pieces around it are good enough or superior, right? Doesn't this Rams side look like that? Goff's not a bad player.
The problem with all of the examples that you give, and Rex Grossman, Trent Dilfer's another one that always comes up. I'm glad you said early Big Ben as well, because Ben's first Super Bowl, he almost did nothing in that playoff run, but a great run game, a great defense, and a quarterback who looked after the football was all they really needed. What's been interesting, and the San Francisco-Los Angeles relationship, the Kyle Shanahan-Sean McVay relationship, I mean, to say Kyle Shanahan's had Sean McVay's number is a graphic understatement. They are... hearing Sean McVay in press conferences talk about being the student to the teacher, having worked under him in places like Washington, it's astonishing to hear, like, somebody, he is your divisional rival head coach and you're giving him maybe just a little too much respect there. And it feels like with Robert Saleh, who has, I think, made a big step up this season, interestingly, because of the injuries, they've just controlled those games. I don't think Jared Goff is a bad quarterback, but I think that he is a guy that you can scheme for. And the problem is that this idea of a scheme quarterback. I think there are maybe two quarterbacks in the NFL that aren't scheme quarterbacks.
That aren't, right, exactly. But is it more pressure? And I know that is a truism of any quarterback, right? That I can't think of one quarterback that thrives under pressure. You might, you know, there are plenty that can, or a handful, I should say, that can battle in the face of it and still perform at a suitable level, but most regress for obvious reasons, but some far more so than others. And Goff seems to be amongst the most Jekyll and Hyde in that respect.
And that is his biggest problem, is that there'll be some weeks where he turns up and you just don't know what you are going to get from him. When the offense is clicking, when he's got a clean pocket, when he's got a little bit of, maybe not even a little bit of time, because Jared Goff's almost a guy you don't want to have to progress through three or four reads. He's a guy who you want to really clearly define the defense on the other side. You want to use those pre-snap motions like they do in that offense in San Francisco, in Kansas City, to make sure that you can read what the defense is doing. And often you'll set up quite literally, so one half of your offense is ready to beat zone, the other half is ready to beat man. And when you see what the defense is, you've immediately eliminated half of the field. Run your outs because we need you to be fooling them, but I'm going over there. That's where the ball is. And when that's worked for Jared Goff, he's got great accuracy, real toughness in the pocket, keeps his eyes downfield, a decent throwing motion, a decent arm. Like, everything is there to be successful. It just does appear to be some mental collapses at times. I think he is good enough to take them to and win a Super Bowl there. I picked the Rams as my NFC West winner this year, which obviously, the Seahawks being as good as they've been for large stretches of the season will likely take that division at this point. But you know, I back McVay and Goff. It's just that they seem to drop two games a season to the 49ers, and yet they have had Arizona's number for the last 4 or 5 years. Sean McVay talked about it being a much improved team this last week, but when you get those divisional games and there is a bit of a momentum in one direction or the other, see with Cleveland this year, like Cleveland got into those divisional games and just seemed to collapse like a flan in a cupboard, just absolutely fall apart. And it's almost like they're going, oh, it's an AFC North game. Let's just not bother today, guys, because we're going to lose it. Let's be honest. And I do sometimes feel like that can be the case. I also kind of just feel like Arizona have not been shown up for what they are over the last few weeks. But maybe there was a feeling that it's not like Bears level. I think when people saw the 5-1 Bears, we were looking at going, is this the worst 5-1 team we've
I ever love this. Seen? I love the worst insert record here team is my favorite narrative of the season. And I love the teams that completely implode as well. So the Bears after a decent record, so the Bears absolutely are doing that. So that you're right, they're not at that level. It's interesting what you're suggesting though. And again, I'm here, this is another hot take that is doing the rounds. I'm not altogether buying, because there is a tendency to overreact. And look, as we've established, I think quite clearly and statistically backed it up, Kyler Murray has had a difficult couple of weeks, right? But this idea that defenses have worked out Kyler Murray, I think he's probably overstating that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think he is workoutable in the right offense. I actually think he's one of those guys who, and again, I'm not saying that he's one of those two guys who I don't think are system quarterbacks. Who I literally think it's Pat Mahomes and it's Russell Wilson, and that might be it. Yeah, like, I think that everyone
Lamar.
So, I still think Lamar Jackson is, though, because he needs that element of the run game there. If you tried to make Lamar Jackson be a pure pocket passer, I don't think he could. He'd have a level of success, but you couldn't literally put him into any system and it would work. I do think those two guys are the only two who I think you could put Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes on any offensive scheme in the NFL and they would run it competently. Mm. I don't think you can say the same about Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. Maybe it's wrong to go to the older quarterbacks, but even like what we've seen from guys like Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, like the guys coming in who've had really good seasons this year, you still feel like, yeah, but they're going to need to have things around them to be successful, as almost every NFL quarterback does.
Well, Mike Glennon can handle any system in the NFL. Let me tell you that right now.
He's had to handle enough of them, so.
Glennon. All right. I think we're clearly both picking the Rams there by the sound of it. Let's go to Saints-Falcons next. This is an interesting game, given what we saw the Falcons do last week. And it was the shock of the week, I think, just how easily they dismantled the Raiders. The Falcons probably will be without Julio going into this one at the time of recording this, which is Friday afternoon. That's what we are expecting. So they're going to be shorthanded for sure. So the line is pretty low for me, given that. And I guess a lot of that is down to the recency bias of, look how big the Falcons went. There's no Drew Brees. And let's start with that. What have you made of the first couple of starts for Taysom Hill?
So I think I almost think too much has been made of the Broncos game. It feels like I literally just watched that game back last night, and they went out there and went, well, they haven't got any quarterbacks. We're going to win this game by 4 touchdowns, most likely. Why would we do anything out of the box? Why would we show our hand in any way? Why would we force Taysom to throw the ball 30 plus times? It's astonishing that he's not.
Because you make a really interesting point there that I want to elaborate on, because I don't think it is emphasized enough, or it's often mentioned in passing and they're not really developed. Coordinators and teams will hold on to stuff for the latter stages of the season, right? And as you say, not show the hand, not necessarily give too much when it is unnecessary. And that, as you say, was probably the prototypical game where they were going to be as conservative, or at least revealing as they needed to be.
The most obvious example from recent seasons is the Philly special, which had been in the Eagles offense since the season before. They'd practiced it in preseason, changing up actually who was throwing the ball, and they were going to run it they had plans to run it, I think, in either the divisional or the championship game. And they've talked openly about it. It was when they played the Vikings, who had just come off the Minnesota Miracle, I think it was. This is all kind of trying to recall it, so I might have got the wrong season. But they'd come off that big win the week before and just got absolutely trounced. They just went, well, we don't actually need to run it today. Let's hold it again.
Yeah.
And that's what you've, like, coordinators have plays that they have for certain situations that, and what always astonishes me about,
well, the Butler Super Bowl play, right? Teams.
Well, so that amazing example is the Butler Super Bowl play, because the Seahawks hadn't run that play on the goal line for something like a year and a half. And yet, because they are so meticulously planned and so studied, the Patriots had seen that that was one of their goal line options. And we spoke with Jimmy Garoppolo in the locker room directly after that Super Bowl. And as the scout team quarterback, it's always quite an interesting person to talk about when they've had, like, when they beat a good defense. And he told us they ran that play 30 times in practice and Malcolm Butler didn't pick him off once. But that 30 reps of doing that play meant that when they saw it, Belichick knew to rotate extra defensive backs in. He saw the look he wanted. He brought the extra guys in, and Malcolm Butler just made a phenomenal play on it. But they'd held back their knowledge on that, and the Seahawks had held back that play.
That play, yeah.
And you just, and so I think that, to bring it back to kind of the original point, Taysom, because, like, we could go off on one in a big way here, not that we haven't already.
That's a separate show we're going to definitely get into more, but yes. Marley's already, I can hear him in my ears. I can, he's like Tomlin, as you say, he doesn't need words. He just, it's just that sense. That, just that breath. Sense. Yeah, it's all it is.
The Taysom Hill was good in the first game against the Falcons. Like, viable NFL quarterback good. Now, it was one game, and he still didn't throw a touchdown pass, which means it's been 4 years since he threw a touchdown pass, and none of them in the NFL, which is ridiculous. But he looked fine in that game. He made some plays. The scheme worked for him. They used the run game, and he looked like, I mean, no real drop-off from what we saw from Teddy Bridgewater last season when he had to step in for Drew Brees.
Right.
Now, Teddy Bridgewater did have one or two absolutely phenomenal performances, which we've not seen from Taysom Hill, and maybe that's this week. But I don't see why with... And in fact, on the first game, Michael Thomas had his best game in... Well, I know he'd had the injuries, but he'd had his best game since the first few weeks of the season.
And it's, you look at the look at who he's targeted since he started, and it is Michael Thomas 70% of looks, but, you know, statistically, something like that anyway.
And it's because they are playing, instead of having Drew Brees back there, who is reading defenses much more intricately and making changes, they are running the offense that's written on paper, and they are running it on schedule, and they are not freelancing. And so Michael Thomas is seeing the ball a lot, and he's having success doing it. Like, everything has been on time, on rhythm, and just worked. And I think that's what they'll do again this weekend. Sean Payton is underrated when it comes to football genius at the offensive position. I think everyone wants to look at McVay and Shanahan and the young guys coming through, LaFleur and people like that, but Sean Payton's been doing that same thing for 10 plus years now.
I totally agree.
He's not a popular man, but he's a brilliant coach.
We'll get over that. Yeah. I think it's a great point you make. I think he is underrated, and I think this is why a lot of people were sleeping early on the Saints this season, you know, for that reason. I mean, defensively, they have been playing, I think, collectively better than we expected, certainly in the secondary. But offensively, all the talk was, well, Brees hasn't got the long ball, the deep ball anymore. And they've just shown, well, it doesn't matter. When you've got those two working together with the cast assembled around them, it doesn't matter. And Brees goes down, it doesn't seem to matter. Two questions on the Falcons, then we'll go on to Browns Titans. Firstly, seeing as we love these narratives this season, the worst team with insert record here and the best team with insert bad record here. The Falcons now 4-7, and they've been a lot of close games, Will, and they've had some heartbreakers, some games they've thrown away. They flip coach mid-season, and these two questions are connected because I want to ask you about Raheem Morris and whether he should get the gig. But before we get your answer on that, this Falcons side a lot better than a number of teams with superior records, do you think?
Yeah, I do think so. And if you actually look at the six-game stretch that Raheem Morris has coached, 1-4-6, they lost the game at the Saints, and that was the game that I went on radio and I thought, right, this is where their defense really shows up and kills a team. Turns out they waited another 7 days to do that and did it against the Raiders instead. I'm just ahead of time, Matt. That's the point, is I'm a soothsayer. I just predict these things coming ahead of schedule.
It'll line up at some point. It's like the turnover differential. It won't be out of sync for too much longer.
I'm like the two Ronnie's mastermind sketch of picks. I just get the right picks a week early. That's the problem.
Love the cultural reference there.
Another one for the kids.
Yeah, we were talking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles just before, and Marley, who was of that generation, had no idea what we were talking about at all. My God, help me out, listen. Help me out, 20-something listeners out there. Please tell me you've watched Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Hit us up at the NC Show if you haven't. We will make it a stipulation that if you're going to continue listening to this show, you have to have watched at least one John Candy film. I'm calling that right now.
Required viewing.
It is.
The point being, back on the football, I love Planes, Trains, is that I think Raheem Morris has come in and done a great job, and I will answer that question, but I also think their defense got healthy. Deion Jones has been huge for them. Keanu Neal has been huge for them. They run it's that same scheme that with Dan Quinn that kind of was bred out of Seattle, the cover three system, where they play very simple, deep high safety, two corners. And it's all about speed at linebacker is absolutely huge. Speed at safety is absolutely huge. And those are two positions that are so important to them that maybe in other squads you can let up a little bit on if you've got some good pass rush or good corners. And having the best players in those two positions back for them has been absolutely massive and has really changed their season. Todd Gurley falls down at the 1 yard line. They've won 5 of 6 and they're a game out of the playoffs. Like, that's astonishing considering just how bad they were to start the season, just how many 16 point leads they gave up over the first 5 weeks. Like the Cowboys game, that just absolute mess at one point. And they've really turned things around. I think what's fascinating about this game this weekend is you've got two teams who normally we're so used to 30, 40 point per team shootouts with these two.
Right.
And actually, we might get with what the Saints have now conceded one touchdown in 4 weeks and the Falcons defense is suddenly healthy. This might be like 13-10 and might be the most like just the least NFC South game of all time.
Old school Tennessee, like the Jeff Fisher Titans game. Every Jeff Fisher Titans game, I'm convinced, ended 17-13. So does he get the gig, do you think, Raheem Morris, or are they gonna drink the Kool-Aid and pick some hipster Joe Brady style from college?
I really liked the Raheem Morris was on the Peter King podcast this week off the back of that Raiders win. And I hadn't really heard him talk much. Part of the thing with the Zoom conversation stuff, you just don't see as much of it on TV. They don't use as much of the footage as they would do. I was really, really impressed with the way that he approached that entire interview, with the way he talked about his first head coaching stint, which wasn't good in Tampa Bay, but kind of just said, you know, I was 30 years old and I knew everything except I knew absolutely nothing. And the way he talked about his approach to rebuilding the organization, the way he talked about bringing in, identifying leaders on each kind of, not just each phase of play, but actually a run game guy, a pass game guy, and picking out leaders and establishing with them what they needed to do to turn this team around. And I think the way he's turned it around, there's a huge question mark over what they do with Matt Ryan. I think if you want to absolutely blow it up and you're going to move on from Matt Ryan and you're going to go and try and get a young quarterback, which they've moved out of the stakes for the top three guys now, probably, who might go 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Which is, they were very much in that conversation a few months ago. But if they don't decide to make that change and they're going to try and win a Super Bowl with this team with some augmentation, then I think Raheem Morris is absolutely the way to go. I only blow it up if you're going to blow it up. If you're going to go Matt Rule, Carolina Panthers, break it down, start again, then maybe you go and look at a college coach. But I think Raheem Morris has done enough the last 6 weeks to prove that he deserves a shot at it, at least.
Yeah. And look, I mean, it's very much his control, right? If he ends strongly, it's always the best way. Like in, you know, we saw this with the Dolphins last season, of course, and it's in football as it is in stand up as it is really in life. If you end strongly, it doesn't matter what happened first half of it all. Incidentally, just a very quick tangential point, I might have told you this before, seeing as we've worked together a lot over the years, but when I had the pleasure of interviewing Joe Montana, of course, I asked, we talked John Candy and we talked to Uncle Buck, and I asked him his favorite candy movie, and he went Planes, Trains. He went Planes, Trains, and Uncle Buck was number two, which I kind of probably am leaning towards in the candy power rankings.
I have a real, real affinity for Cool Runnings because it was one of the first films I remember seeing at the cinema when I was, I think that came out like 93, 94. So
yes.
I
yeah, yeah, yeah.
9, 10 years old. And so that has a real affinity. That and Jurassic Park, I remember being the two things that I really remember seeing at the cinema when I was younger and being like wowed by them.
Yeah.
So I, they, like, it's a personal thing that I love Cool Runnings. I think I take Planes, Trains over Uncle Buck. You get Steve Martin with Planes, Trains as well, who is
right.
a comic genius. And the young people who haven't seen The Jerk and who haven't seen stuff like Planes, Trains and things, those are all sensational films. And he was, those two were the superstars of their era. So I, I'd have Planes, Trains over Uncle Buck, I think. Although
Steve Martin's stand up as well. If you see the Planes, Trains, there's a thing doing the rounds with deleted scenes, scenes that they took out. I'll send you the link if we'll push out on our social handles as well. A couple of deleted scenes that have been found and other scenes that weren't filmed, but were scripted. It's really, really interesting. The Uncle Buck and Cool Runnings connection, I don't think this happens in Planes, Trains, is John Candy betting on horses. I think isn't that the opening scene of Cool Runnings pretty much? He's got some and in Uncle Buck the same thing. I love John Candy even more. I'm sure he just introduced those little nuances to his characters. Right, Browns Titans is where we'll go next. So this is fascinating because the Titans are typically, Will, amongst the stoutest run D's in the NFL, but they can get burnt when they're up against heavyweight running backs, right? Dalvin Cook, James Robinson, they've torn it up. So Nick Chubb, for me, is the key to this game.
Not just Nick Chubb, but I think Nick Chubb's been so good this year and deserves to be in the conversation. If we're taking this scene, this season on its own merit, you mentioned Dalvin Cook. I think you talk Dalvin Cook, you talk about James Robinson, you talk about Nick Chubb, probably there's two or three, well, Derrick Henry obviously as well, but he's been a top three to top five running back in the NFL this season. But they've also got Kareem Hunt back there, who is a great change of pace back and actually might be a top 10 back in the NFL in his own right. Two top 10 backs, you know, makes for a good backfield, let's be honest, and can take some of that weight off. Off Baker Mayfield, who I nearly called Johnny Manziel then. That's a weird little Freudian slip that nearly came out for some reason. Who can take the weight off Baker Mayfield, who has shown a little bit of a tendency maybe when he's in the big games and is forced to throw, you know, 30, 40 times that it can be, or plus, can be a little difficult for him. But
and that's what they've, I mean, that's what the one of the main things Stefanski's influenced, right, is that they're ranking, I think, 31st in pass percentage, right? So they're just, you know, taking the literally taking the ball out of his hands and has simplified it as much as they can. Do you like what Stefanski's done? I mean, it couldn't have been much more dysfunctional and erratic under Freddie Kitchens. So it wasn't a, it was a low bar, let's face it. But I think at the same time, there were very high expectations. And let's follow the theme of the episode through. Are the Browns one of those teams, their record's misleading either way, do you think?
I think it's maybe a little misleading in their favour, but that's not a pox on Kevin Stefanski in any way. I think he has done a good job. He's settled that team down. They have had real problems on defence. You know, no Denzel Ward, no Myles Garrett is huge. That's probably their two best players on defence. And so to lose those two when going up against an offence that runs the play action so well, that has Derrick Henry, that has those kind of Corey Davis showing up last week, which has been a necessity alongside AJ Brown, who had a quiet few weeks, but is suddenly back to seemingly his best, and some tight ends who do it at a very, very high level. In fact, the guy who they brought in this year, whose name is going to completely escape me, and I'm going to double check it, Jeff Swain, the guy they signed this year, who has adapted to that quite difficult run scheme and just thrown himself into it and blocked brilliantly. It's a great offense. The Browns have only beaten one team with a winning record
one
at this
good
point
team.
In the season. The Colts are the only team who have a winning record they've beaten. Other than that, they've beaten the NFC East, Cincinnati twice, and you know, they're going up against a team who, based on last weekend, are absolutely rolling at the right time of year. Derrick Henry in December is going to be an absolute beast for you. And it feels like this could be a little bit of a... If Cleveland go out and perform in this, this could be the game that makes it go, they are a good football team.
It, undoubtedly, that will happen if they do. And I'm not sure it will necessarily make them a serious... Look, I'm reasonably up on the Browns. I find them very watchable as a team. And you mentioned some of those playmakers defensively, but Mayfield, whether you love him or loathe him, and he seems to have toned it down a lot, of course, off the field. I think that's why a lot of people weren't particularly enamored with him early on, right? But he's a very watchable player. And I guess that's the point, that he has that Favre-like tendency to roll the dice, and they are trying to stifle that. And at any point, that could happen. And Tannehill is almost the diametric opposite. He's so careful with the ball. They are so careful with the ball offensively. I love AJ Brown. They got me thinking, because I know you love your wrestling, Will. And of course, we've talked a lot about my wrestling knowledge. As we found out, I think it was the Houston Super Bowl, we were all piled into a bar to watch the Royal Rumble. And I realized, God, I haven't watched this for years, but as a kid, absolutely loved. So that kind of Flair, Macho Man era, we can take it up to about where the Rock and Stone Cold were running things. And then I sort of fall off a cliff and you educate me. But we are coming from the same place. So on that note, DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, are they, if you're picking wide receiver tag teams, would they be your lock as a tag team? Or do you think that you get like a kind of sneaky Cole Beasley, Danny Amendola, dangerous, smaller guy crew? Who would be your receiver tag team?
You know what's terrifying about DK Metcalf and AJ Brown? They were at Ole Miss at the same time.
Same time, right?
Like, how was that team not in the playoffs? Like, how were you not just throwing the ball 60, 70 times a game and beating right. every team by 60 points? Because that is farcical. I mean, when I talked about the Bears-Packers game looking like men against boys this past week, and that would literally have been like men against boys. It would have been like bringing NFL players down into college football and being like, right, just go and do your thing. Right. Interestingly, what I like the idea of is almost doing it like a three. Guys picked in the second round of last year's draft. We've got AJ Brown. We've got DK Metcalf. We've got San Francisco's very own Debo Samuel as the three toughest wide receivers in the NFL. Nice. Most willing to block, most willing to catch at the point, most willing to just be as physical as possible. They would go and dominate in a kind of... Problem is, the best trios of all time are all people like the Dudley boys, and there's always a Spike Dudley in that situation. So,
so Cole Beasley does get the gig.
Yeah, exactly. I like them. I, in fact, like a DX style stable. So Debo Samuel nice. Will be like X-Pac. That'll work.
Nice. I love that. We've already got two off-season shows locked in. I really want to develop this thing because with coaches that we've been talking all season long on the show, coaches that the most fearsome that are giving that you are most terrified about going into the locker room under at halftime. So clearly Vrabel's on that list. Tomlin, naturally. We think that Joe Judge is up there as well. So I like this idea of head coach tag teams as well. I want to look at coordinators. We're going to spend an hour on this in the off season. Will Gav, you can guarantee that. But back to this game. I think for me the key. It, you've already nailed it. The fact that Denzel Ward and Garrett, are they both 100% confirmed out?
Well, actually, no. Miles Garrett is back off the COVID list. There is a question of what it's like for a guy coming back and having to face someone like Derrick Henry after not practicing for 10 days and having been out of... Yeah, that's potentially a terrifying thing. But Denzel Ward didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday. At the time we're recording, we haven't had the Friday practice reports yet, but I'd be surprised if he's back from that calf injury. And if he is, maybe with limited snaps. So it's still a big loss. But Miles Garrett being back in against Derrick Henry could be a reason the Browns win this game. I still heavily fancy the Titans, but maybe Cleveland prove us all wrong. And actually, we're talking about a team who can even be a force in January.
All right, we're going to do quick fire picks in just a moment. Before we do, let's get you some fancy steers for the weekend. Let's check in with Marley.
Yes, guys, I'm back with my Start'em, Sit'em and defensive pick. Week 13 is a big week in terms of making those playoffs, so here are a couple tips heading into this weekend. My Start'em is going to be Justin Jefferson, wide receiver for the Vikings. The Vikings are playing the Jags this week, and the Jags are the worst team in the NFL in giving up big plays. Teams average more yards per play against the Jags than any other team. Justin Jefferson has been all about the big play this season, averaging the second most yards per catch in the league. The NFL is about matchups. This is a matchup nightmare. Expect Justin Jefferson to go off. My sit-em is Ezekiel Elliott, and I know that'll be tough, seeing as some of you, if you have him, will probably have drafted him as one of your first two picks. But the Cowboys O-line has lost Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, Cam Irving, and all its dignity this season, leading to Zeke having less than 55 rushing yards in 6 of his last 9 and less than 20 receiving yards in 6 of his last 7. Cut your losses and stick him next to the Gatorade against the Ravens. And now by defensive pick, I'm going with a bit of a gamble. I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I know it's all about the offense in Kansas City, and the defense has looked shaky recently, giving up an average of 29.5 points per game in their last 3. But playing the Broncos, the Chiefs have had their number in recent matchups. The last game, the Chiefs D forced 4 turnovers, including a pick 6. Drew Locke didn't practice all of last week, and Jerry Jeudy's been limited all of this week. I would take the gamble on Kansas City.
Thanks, Barney. Lovely stuff. We'll push that out on our social channels as well as a little fantasy capsule. How about that? We did that last week and got a lot of love. So we'll do more of the same. Right. Ready for the quick fire picks, Will Gav?
Oh, I'm all over it. As long as we can agree that we can change the picks on Sunday, if, you know, we find out.
Absolutely not. What you are confirming now.
I'm done then. I'm off.
Okay. No, you can. I will give you that. I will give you that opportunity to change up if you want to. All right. So let's start with Lions Bears. Of course, the Darrell Bevell era begins here. There's always that new coach bounce, isn't there? I quite fancy the Lions here, and certainly to mix it up a little bit and lay some points on the Bears. I mean, there's every chance, because I think the Lions will be narrow dogs for this one. There is chance for an upset win here, I think.
Yeah, 3-point at the moment, and I would take the Lions with the points right now. I legitimately think the Bears have had that much of a drop-off in the last 5 or 6 weeks. And actually, I don't think they were particularly good before that either. I think there's big changes coming there. If we saw one thing from last week, I think it's that Mitchell Trubisky isn't the answer. And so maybe he'll get a mid-career Tannehill bump somewhere else, but he's not the answer in Chicago. I fancy the Lions to win it.
I want a mug that says Mitchell Trubisky isn't the answer. I'm going to send it to our friend Ed Mannion as well.
Or just, if Mitchell Trubisky is the answer, what on earth is the question?
that's the hoodie, which is kind of on both sides. All right, we could like the Lions for that. Interesting. All right, Bengals, Dolphins. I mean, I think it's going to be Dolphins all the way to, you know, money line, so to speak. Will Tua start, though? It seems like he's going to miss out again.
Does sound that way. It does sound like we're going to see more Fitzmagic, who was fine this past week, yeah, played right, reasonably well. And maybe there'll then be question marks if they are still in the, say, the 49ers beat the Bills on Monday and we get a Dolphins win, and suddenly they're right back in the AFC East race. Do they really think about whether to bring Tua back? I loved the whole thing about when he's 100% healthy. No one's ever 100% healthy.
Any player
in the
NFL. Exactly right. And also, it's counterintuitive, right? So the more they get into contention for the playoffs, or as you say, even the division with Fitz, why go away from the hot hand, right? Unless they're winning despite Fitz, I guess, which this Dolphins team could.
It feels like they're still gearing towards the future as much as this season could be a success. That's the one thing I would say. I supported the decision to make the move. I still think I do, but I think you have to know what you've got from Tua as much as you can before you get to this offseason.
Yeah, I really like that theory. As you know, we talked about it on our radio show, I wasn't as big on the move. And I'm not saying that's been vindicated because, you know, circumstance of fate has intervened. But yeah, I would be more of a believer in, by the time we get to this point anyway, Fitz would have had virtually the same amount of football, but I would have given him another 4 or 5 starts and let Tua just breathe in a little more. But same issue, I guess, if they're in contention, then what do you do? Jags, Vikings, speaking of contention, the Jags are still improbably in the mix, but the Jags can play spoilers this weekend. Do they, Will Gab?
It gets tough for the Vikings after this week. They have the Bucks on the road. They have the Saints on the road. They have the Bears, which, as much as we've said the Bears are bad, those divisional games are often a bit topsy-turvy.
Right.
And then I think they're going to be fighting for a playoff place, potentially going to the Lions the final week. I don't think this week's the week they fall over, though. The Jaguars have kept some games tight. Kept it tight with the Browns, kept it tight with the Packers. They're playing competitively, but they're just too talent poor. And I think that the Vikings all run them over at home.
Yeah, I do. I feel that way. Colts, Texans would, I think I would have been leaning more towards the possibility of an upset win if we hadn't had the Will Fuller V, as our friend Mike Carlson calls him, news. But with Will Fuller out, despite Deshaun Watson somehow keeping things alive single-handedly, although now he got into a groove with Fuller and Cooks, of course, they got something going. They had a bit of mojo, but I think that gets deflated with Fuller out. So and I think the Colts need and will get a bounce-back win here.
Breaking news as we're recording. DeForest
Buckner, back.
DeForest Buckner 31 minutes ago was activated off the COVID list.
Oh, that's lock it in then. Yeah.
That was, I nearly flip-flopped my Titans Colts pick when I heard DeForest Buckner was going to be out. Didn't do it because producer Ollie goaded me into not doing it and have regretted it. I wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats for picking the Colts over the Titans. But I'm going to pick the Colts over the Texans, even with Deshaun Watson, as phenomenal as he is.
Okie dokie. Raiders, Jets. I mean, talk about the perfect bounce after an upset shellacking to the extent the Raiders faced. And quarterbacks under pressure. We mentioned it with Goff. Carr as well is in that camp of looks absolutely lights out, elite level, when he doesn't have a care in the world. But when he's under fire, it all goes horribly wrong. And that was part of the story against Atlanta last week, of course. The Jets don't have that type of pass rush, so I can't see anything but a Raiders bounce back win here.
I think we're on board with this. I think it's difficult to say anything. This is a Raiders team who, don't forget, have beaten the Chiefs this season and pushed them all the way to, you know, needing Mahomes to put together a phenomenal 2-minute drive to go and win the game. They have looked good for most of the last 5 weeks. They just looked really bad last weekend. And I kind of think that's this Raiders team overall. They are liable to drop an egg occasionally because they're still not quite at that top tier, but they look like a playoff team right now. And I think that they win this. I think they were 9-point favorites, which feels very generous to the Jets.
It does. And you know, the interesting thing, you make a point there about the Raiders as a playoff team. And it was something I was speculating on in my Times column this week, which was about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers have Washington, incidentally. When you look at the AFC playoff picture, I think there are only two teams that will go toe-to-toe or have the potential to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs in the playoffs in terms of keeping up scoring-wise. And I think that's the Steelers and the Chiefs. You said to me as we were leaving the studio last Sunday, the Chiefs are considerably better than any other team in the AFC, arguably in the NFL, right? And so I think they are clear favorites to go back to the Super Bowl. But out of all of the teams that are likely or in the mix to make the playoffs in the AFC, I think that despite their defensive deficiencies, I think the Raiders, as they've demonstrated this season, but the Steelers, they're the only two that will go toe-to-toe with them.
I think the Raiders can go toe-to-toe with them. I quite like the Titans to be able to keep a game tight with them. When a game's tight, obviously it can go either way. They are a team who I would fancy to give them some trouble in January. But it's very rare that things that we say at the beginning of the NFL season prove to be correct when we get to the end of the NFL season.
We're
12 weeks in and the conversation about the Chiefs returning 20 of 22 starters, 21 of 22 coaches, that consistency in a COVID-19 hit season was going to be huge for them. I do think they're the best team in the NFL right now. And it's going to take something special to beat them in January, but the Raiders have done it once already. Only team to do it in what the last must be 20 plus games now. So there's every chance.
All right, let's rattle through the others because all our tangents on John Candy have taken us over. So, okay, Chiefs have the Broncos at home at Arrowhead. Double-digit favourites again, although the Broncos have a full quotient of quarterbacks back. Maybe they should just kind of wheel out each one of them. For a quarter each. Give Bortles a nod. nice to see him getting a turnout. I mean, look, the Chiefs surely are going to win this, but is Vegas going a bit crazy with a 14-point spread or thereabouts?
I don't think it's that crazy. Although Vic Fangio is a good defensive schemer. I'm not sure he's a great head coach, but he's a good defensive schemer and he's got that defense playing at a good level. Mm. So that gives me some pause that they will keep it tighter than 14 points. But the problem is Broncos fans are still convinced Drew Lock is the the option.
And
maybe there's still possibility of that. And we've seen him have good games here and there. But, you know, of the 39 graded quarterbacks this season on PFF, he is 35 overall. And I think that's shown in games. And actually, I semi-joked, but really meant it. You know, many a true word say in jest with Broncos fans. Be thankful your quarterbacks are all out, because now you have an excuse for why you're going to lose to the Saints, because you would have done anyway. That defense is really good.
Fair. Seahawks Giants, the Colt McCoy era continues for New York. Seattle, let's not even attempt to pick that one. I mean, obviously Seattle all the way there. Eagles, Packers, similarly, I think. My God, we're going to talk about this on the Edge Rush show, Ollie and I. The most extraordinary bad beat in modern gambling history.
The Eagles deep
that
shot.
Game last time around. Surely lightning won't strike twice. Not even close, I think, this one. The Packers all the way. What about... Yeah, okay. Washington Steelers, I'll ask you on, Will, because some people shading that this might be a lot closer than some suggest. And I'm interested in your take quickly on the Steelers, whether they are one of those teams who has a misleading record. Are you buying the Steelers, or are you down on them, like a lot of people increasingly seem to be?
I'm still buying the Steelers. I think people just look at the 11-0 record and go, oh, they don't look like an 11-0 team. And, you know, Marley or Ollie, whoever did it, put it in the running order saying, are Pittsburgh the worst 11-0 team of all time? Mm-hmm. I did the deep dive. I've looked into it. There are 11 teams in NFL history who have gone 11-0. Five of them have won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Four of them have lost the Super Bowl. And two of them lost in the divisional round, didn't even make the championship game.
I can think of it. So the Panthers and the Patriots more recently, I guess, are the two that lost.
So the Panthers, in fact, if you look at the recent ones, four of the last five lost the Super Bowl. And the reason it's four of the last five is because the Colts and Saints both went 11-0 in 2009 and faced each other in the Super Bowl. So someone had to win it.
Right. Yeah.
So, but actually the trend in the modern era is that 11-0 teams go to the Super Bowl and lose it. Mm. The Packers in 2011 lost in the divisional round after going 13-0. The thing is, that Packers team, maybe they were worse, because although they were historically good on offense, one of only two teams in NFL history to score 42 points in six games, just ridiculous. They were also the 32nd defense in the league in terms of yards conceded. And they had 31 interceptions that year and still were the worst defense in yardage. So they were a team who probably went like 13-0 to start the season, but could have easily been 7-5, 7-6. Like those games, there were a lot of games that they won by fine margins. The fact is that the only way they're the worst 11-0 team in NFL history is if they don't get past the divisional round, which I think they will. So I don't want to really judge it at this point. It just gave me a fun excuse to go and look at some stats.
I love those stats. I love them. And the Times piece, because I'll plug it again, was just on Tomlin really, and how ridiculous it has been over the last 5 years. And I know that, and this is part of the point of my article, that the revisionism began last season with that 8-8 record despite everything, and then has rolled into this year. But he is, after everything he's achieved, an underrated coach. People talking about moving on from him a couple of years ago. He is has consistently been criticized for cracks in his tactical acumen, bad decisions made in games. And maybe some of those are valid, right? But then if you look at his body of work, it's extraordinary to me, Will, that he is slated. But look, you know, because time is against us, we will that's number three in the offseason. Coaches who are underrated NFL, I think is where we'll go there. All right, so Steelers for the win for me against Washington. Do you see an upset there?
If there's a team to upset the Steelers left on their slate, I think it might be Washington as like a trap game type game. I'm still picking the Steelers, but I wouldn't be that stunned with Bud Dupree now out as well.
Yeah, that's big.
Is a huge loss for them. I think they are a TJ Watt or Minka Fitzpatrick injury away from falling apart on defense, sadly.
It's a great point because there's such big, leading interceptions, right? Such massive playmakers, which has turned a number of games this season. Bills 49ers, your 49ers, as we said at the top of the show, back in contention. And I fancy them here for a win. And particularly, it was Monday Night Football, right? So it could be looking at it. If the Rams are taking the cards, following your logic through and thinking, great, you know, they'll have the motivation, as if they, I love that as the hot take. I love, they'll be motivated to go out and win this one after that. But in all seriousness, they'll look at the opportunity there, and they get the win against the Bills. They are right back in it.
I'm not saying this is definitely going to happen, but here's what wouldn't surprise me if it did happen. Because what was special about that team that went to the Super Bowl last year, and the way that they blocked for each other and the way that they worked. And I know every team talks about ethic and teamwork, and I know I have some bias because I'm talking about the team I support, but I'd never seen in 20 years a 49ers team who, and very rarely in other teams, who really, really did play for the team, who really had that internal atmosphere, who had that kind of, and I think if they won the Super Bowl, that would have been the big story. Guys like Raheem Mostert and those guys coming up and making real impact from almost nowhere type positions. They didn't. So it becomes about Jimmy Garoppolo, Kyle Shanahan whiffing on big games, yada, yada.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this Arizona situation, having to leave Santa Clara County, move their families away, live in Arizona, play their next two games there. They also play Arizona on the road, so it's three of their next four games, and the Cowboys on the road in that four-game stretch. It's one of those things where I remember the Giants and Eli Manning, and I know I'm banging on when we're tight for time. Sorry, Marley. But when the Giants came and played here, the first ever International Series game, they talked about that mid-season having it almost being like a training camp, and how big that was to the team itself, and how much that pushed them towards winning that Super Bowl. If the 49ers are going to do something ridiculous and end up in the playoffs and go on a Giants-like steam through the playoffs, actually, I think this Cardinals and this Arizona situation might end up being the making of them rather than the breaking of them. Mm. But equally, they might lose the next four games and just be a complete mess. They've not got Garoppolo still. They've not got Kittle still. Lots of players coming back healthy, and the Bills are a good football team. So
I love the fact you've just essentially called the 49ers for a Super Bowl run. that's pretty much what the last 2 minutes was. And I love it. And I'm going to go put money on the 49ers to win. All right. One word, one team and one word why they're going to win, or a quick reason why they're going to win. Patriots Chargers. The Pats, of course, with their tails up after that big win last week. Can they double down?
The Pats win by a single score, and it's heartbreaking in some way for the Chargers, because that's how the Chargers play football.
How could I argue? And then Cowboys-Ravens. I'm lost track now. Is this on Tuesday or Wednesday? Or is it a double down on Thursday? God knows, these games are coming all through the week. Cowboys-Ravens, of course, it's Tuesday night, isn't it?
Because Tuesday night, yeah. Yeah,
we'll call it anyway, because it's on the Week 13 slate, even though we've got a show in between. Interesting game, of course, as well, that Lamar could still be out for the Ravens. We just don't know how banged up they're going to be again. So difficult to call, I guess, but for the hell of it, go for it, Will.
The performance against the Steelers gave me a little bit of hope and faith in the Ravens turning things around, but they have been bad for most of the last 4 or 5 weeks. They're too talented a team with too good a coach to keep losing games. I'm going to take the Ravens at home.
Lovely stuff. We got there in the end, wildly over. Hey, this is a podcast. We can do this after I said to Molly, let's keep this one punchy. But hey, it was ever going to be punchy with me and you, Will. Cracking work, bud. We are back in action Sunday, of course, over on our live TalkSport 2 show. So join us for that 5 o'clock. I'm looking forward to that. I expect a different Christmas jumper of equal caliber.
Anything if I've got one. I've got a couple of Star Wars ones.
You've got 48 hours. Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's some wrestling. You know, we'll see what we see what we've got there. And of course, our listeners can catch you on your very own fine pod, Gridiron. So where can they pick that up?
So if you find at Gridiron on Twitter or at UK Gridiron on Instagram, you can find all the links and everything there. The Gridiron Show podcast with myself, Simon Clancy and Liam Blackburn, the editor of Gridiron. And we're joined weekly by Brian Billick, the Ravens Super Bowl winning head coach. And he was brilliant this week on the hirings and firings and best head coach jobs. And he thinks the Texans might be the best job available just because of Deshaun Watson. And it's a strong opinion on it. So it's worth a listen.
I'll go check that out. Sounds good. Cracking stuff, bud. Good to see you. I'll see you Sunday.
Cheers, guys.
Lovely stuff from Will Gap. He'll be back very soon. You can count on that. In fact, sounds like we've got some pretty decent off-season pods to get into, but there is plenty of football before all of that. We're going to be rolling all the way through the rest of the regular season into the postseason, up to and including the Super Bowl right here on the Nat Coombs Show. Lots of pods coming thick and fast, lots of extra content across our social channels as well. at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Don't forget to check out our Edge Rush show if that's your thing. Dropping Saturday, and we are back on Monday with our Week 13 review. Look forward to it. Look forward to the football. See you then, gang. Bye for now.